Welcome to the Sales and Marketing Talk Show. Today we are discussing product marketing, and I have Alexander Cardwell joining from Supermetrics. Welcome, Alexander. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. As we were joking before we started recording, that there's some home reno going on with my neighbors, but hopefully that doesn't interfere with our discussion today.
Yeah, and I can imagine that a lot of people are going through that. And I remember it was actually last spring that I was working from home, and I got my neighbors fixing their apartment. It was like 2 weeks straight, and they were drilling on their like wall behind my back for 2 weeks or so. But that's life. But hey,
we've all been there.
Yeah. Hey, as mentioned, today we are talking about product marketing, and we are going through the four pillars of product marketing. But before hopping to those ones, can you just give a like short introduction on like who you are and what do you do in Supermetrics?
Sure. So Alex Cardwell, head of product marketing here at Supermetrics. Actually kind of new to Supermetrics. I just joined roughly 2 months ago. Before that, had been working in various product marketing roles at various software companies for the past, I want to say, 10 years or so. Started my career, actually, I was based out of the Bay Area for a while, but I've been kind of back and forth between the US and Finland ever since. I think that was my first stint in the Bay Area was like 2012-ish. And yeah, been back and forth ever since, now settled here in Finland. And product marketing is really where it's been at for me for the past, you know, again, 10 years or so. I had a period where I moved more kind of overall into a marketing directorship role. So I was responsible for an entire marketing team. But quickly, I learned that where my strengths lie and where my passion lied was in product marketing and kind of those four pillars that we're gonna cover today. So really happy to be able to continue my career in that domain.
Yeah, and I think like product marketing itself, it's like kind of growing at this point, because if you look for B2B SaaS companies and what kind of talent they are hiring for their marketing teams, I think like everyone is hiring like product marketers at the moment. But why do you think that is like so hot topic at the moment?
Yeah, it's interesting. We were actually talking about this a while back with the team. And of course, product marketing is something that any software company can benefit from. But it's not just a software function. Of course, if you look back kind of historically, one of the bigger companies here in Finland, Nokia, had a ton of product marketers back, you know, 20, 30 years ago when they were launching, you know, different devices to different markets. And they were literally marketing those individual products. So it's not that new in terms of a concept, but maybe back then it was a bit of a blend between channel marketing, between partner marketing, and then the actual kind of marketing activities. It was just siloed for one product. So now fast forward to where we are today in the kind of B2B and just in general software world, there's been, people are noticing that they need this kind of marketing needs this kind of cross-functional link within the organization. So that's why product marketing is so interesting. It really sits at that intersection between marketing, the product team, and the sales team, and brings all those stakeholders to the same table. So I think that's where the value lies, and that's why so many companies are kind of pushing to build out their product marketing teams these days.
Yeah, makes sense. But hey, for the four pillars of product marketing and what there is, we will be going through in detail of all of these, basically like why these are important, what they mean in practice, and then going through some examples as well. But in short, they are the messaging and positioning. Then there is like the product launch, go-to-market strategies. Then there is sales enablement. And then lastly, typically companies are talking about like competitive intelligence, but today we are a little bit discussing that one. And then kind of the market intelligence and like what is the difference between those two. And we could start things off with the messaging and positioning. And what I've actually like noticed is that this is something that like companies are really like understanding the value like right now. If I look like past couple of years, it wasn't this big as it is. Like, companies talking like how should we position ourselves in the market, how we should be like building our messaging and so forth. But can you open up a bit like how do you look at messaging and positioning on product marketing side?
Yeah, sure. So again, the way I think of in general the product marketing and the four pillars that you outlined there is that you ask 10 different product marketers what they do, you're going to get 10 different answers. But more often than not, these four are things that are going to be recurring. And it's great that you start off with kind of messaging and positioning, because that's something that really touches everything you do in product marketing. And essentially, messaging and positioning is looking at what does and doesn't make your ICP and your target market tick, and then framing your product in a way that actually resonates with them. And the way I look at it, and this is actually, full disclosure, totally stole this from another chat I heard by Marcus Andrews and John Rooney, who are having another good chat on product marketing. But the way they said it, and the way I tend to think about it as well, is that think about it as the difference of being fluent in a language versus just knowing how to speak it. More often than not, if you're fluent in a language, you know, people can tell you're a native speaker, etc. If you're if you just know how to speak the language, you can tell, you can speak it very well, but you might not, you know, know all the nuances of that language. So it's the same thing in product marketing. Quality product marketing allows your entire organization, not just marketing, but you know, sales and really everybody that especially is customer facing, allows them to have, you know, fluent discussions about your product and the benefits it can bring to the ICP.
Yeah. And I think like the value part is super important there. And what I would actually quite surprisingly many times is like when you ask from a SaaS company, the value that you are bringing for your clients, when you ask them, and then after that, when you go to their like best fit clients and you ask them like, what is the value that the tool is providing? The answer is surprisingly often actually a little bit different.
Very different.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. That's really common. And I mean, that comes from, you know, your building a product to, and you have this idea on how it's going to solve a certain problem, and you're, you know, you're building away, and you kind of get you get blinded by whatever else is going on. You give that thing, that shiny thing to a customer, and they're going to just come up with 20 different use cases for it. And that's where kind of product marketing and the product teams and in general kind of customer marketing can work to figure out what it is that this product is actually solving for our customers, and that then helps you evolve your messaging.
Yeah, makes sense. And I really think like a lot of companies are more focused on their like solution rather than the problem. So I would love to hear an example, like if you should like say it shortly, based on the couple of months you've been with Supermetrics now, what is the problem that you are solving?
Oh no, what is the problem that we're solving? Tough question. No. So obviously for those that don't know Supermetrics, we're in the business of moving data. So in its simplest form, we streamline the delivery of marketing data from your different MarTech platforms. You know, what are there's 7,000 MarTech tools right now. So we streamline delivery from those tools into your reporting tools of choice. And what that basically allows you to do is go from spending, you know, days on, I remember I, you know, in previous roles when I didn't have Supermetrics on hand, I might literally spend days making report, for example, board reports, like looking through all our tools, figuring out all the data, copying, pasting that somewhere else. And that was just a nightmare. So what Supermetrics allows you to do is go from spending days on creating reporting like that to, you know, a few hours. It allows you to spend less time moving data and more time using it.
Yeah. Yeah. So kind of the problem is that I am currently using too much manual work on like moving data in my marketing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's something, and this is where, and we'll get to it in probably towards the marketing competitive intelligence part as well. But, you know, sometimes people aren't looking to solve that problem. They could be happy with the status quo. And then you need to figure out how you restructure your messaging to capture the attention of someone who's necessarily not looking to solve that problem.
Yeah, makes sense. Now I need to ask a question from you, because you are an expert of product marketing, and we have these four pillars. And when starting this conversation, we kind of had this order, but can mm-hmm. we hop onto the market intelligence and competitive intelligence right now? Or like, is there a reason why we should do these in certain order?
I'm happy to do it. Any order you see fit.
Because I think like the market intelligence would be probably the next best one based on your like comment there. And
sure.
you mentioned like before this discussion over email that like a lot of companies are like thinking about the competitive intelligence, but not the market intelligence. So can you walk us through like what are the differences between these two, mm-hmm. and why do you think it's better actually to go maybe with the market intelligence?
Yeah, sure. I think that, well, actually, I don't think that companies are necessarily neglecting the market intelligence side. They just might not know that they're doing it. So typically, if you look at most like you Google, what is product marketing? You'll find a subset of these four pillars, and there'll be competitive intelligence in there, but less to do so on market intelligence. So for competitive intelligence, of course, pretty self-explanatory. It's about keeping tabs on your competitors, understanding what they're doing, what they're not doing, et cetera, et cetera. And the thing why, and trust me, I'm not one to disregard competitive intelligence. It's super important because as a company, as a software company, as any company, really, you don't really get to choose your competitors. The market does that for you. You can have a very clear opinion of who your competitors are, and you can list them out in a nice spreadsheet or on a nice grid or on an axis or whatever. Then you go into a conversation with someone in your target market, and they're like, well, actually, you know, we're not thinking of using you as a replacement for this or that. We're thinking of you to just get out of the status quo. A lot of people, again, for example, for Supermetrics, are still copy and pasting data. So the competitive solution is actually to not do anything, or just maintain the status quo. It's also, you know, the CEO of Netflix famously said that they compete with a bottle of wine on a Friday night. So if you think about what you would do on a Friday night, would you watch Netflix or would you, know, go out and have a nice restaurant dinner? That's a competitive offering. So being very thorough in your competitive intelligence is super important. But I just think that that term kind of limits the scope of what, for example, product marketing is really good at and well positioned for. So and market intelligence, on the other hand, takes it like a step further. It compares, you know, what are the major shifts in the market? What are the major trends? Are touchscreen phones on the rise? Nokia famously thought that touchscreens were not going to be a thing. And then Apple came along, and turns out that touchscreens really were a thing. With good market intelligence, they should have been able to see that happening. But market intelligence, again, it just spans, it makes it much broader. And I think product marketing is a function that is really well positioned to do that. You know, stuff like market research, ICP research, win-loss research, going through Salesforce, understanding why we won, why we lost, because sometimes it is a competing solution. Sometimes it's not. Maybe it's budget. Maybe it's we just didn't want to do anything right now. It could be any one of things. And I think when you specifically talk about competitive intelligence, you might limit yourself to the kind of potential of that department and that function.
Yeah. Yeah, I think great points there. And I think for like the competitive side, it's like super important for companies to really understand that they are those like kind of direct competitors who are doing the same, but then at the same time, like indirect competitor as well. Or if I think about us, like growth marketing agents for B2B SaaS, every now and then we lose to another agency, but actually most of the time that is not the reason. It might be that the company didn't end up like scaling their marketing, or they ended up like hiring six people on their marketing team. So actually, like quite often, it's not the direct competition, but it is something totally different.
Yeah. 100%. And you know, this is where kind of again, I mentioned at the beginning that messaging and positioning kind of play into a lot of these different core pillars. That's one example of it. Kind of positioning yourself around what your target customer is looking to do. There's another great and these things like competitive intelligence and messaging and positioning. All these things can be used in such creative ways. Like there's a famous example also from, I can't remember what it was, probably 30 or 40 years ago, but Coca-Cola or Pepsi had released a new product called Crystal Pepsi. And Crystal Pepsi was a cola drink that was just clear. There's no reason why cola should be dark. It's just how it's been, always been. So Pepsi came out with this Crystal Pepsi and it became very popular. So Coca-Cola didn't want to lose that market segment to a competitor. So they created their own brand. I think it was called Tab Clear or something like that. And they purposefully positioned it as a poor version of Crystal Pepsi, which effectively, when they pushed that product in a poor way, killed both of those product lines. So there's kind of interesting ways where you can do all of this. Not sure if that's, you know, the best, the ethical way to go about it, but it's just, it shows the power of, you know, what these types of initiatives can do.
Yeah. You have mentioned a couple of times already a word ICP, so ideal customer profile. And I think that is very important, basically, like all of the pillars here. But can you share a bit, like how do you approach like ICP in Supermetrics? How do you research like who are your like dream customers? What makes them buy from you and all that?
Yeah. Great question. ICP research, again, also like a core piece of market intelligence, understanding that ICP, it really stems. I think there's two ways to look at it. You can do qualitative research and you can do quantitative research. Quantitatively, a great way to go about it is, for example, just literally look across the board. What are the deals we're winning? Who are our happiest customers? What are their titles? What kind of companies do they work for? What's the industry? That already gives you an idea, like a hypothesis that you can start, you know, formulating your ICP around. But in a lot of research, and you know, we've been talking about this a lot at Supermetrics as well, there's no real substitute for the qualitative side of things. So actually sitting down, talking to somebody, understanding what they do, how it makes them tick. So that's really the way I would do it. I would use quantitative research. So looking at where you are strongest in terms of the numbers, as a way to kind of maybe frame your thought process, or maybe validate a hypothesis, but I wouldn't use it solely, because there's no, once you get in a room and you start talking to somebody, you know, you get to ask, okay, so why did you do that? And why did you do that? Why did you do that? You know, it's the five whys. You can keep going deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's not something you can always do with numbers alone. So when it comes to ICP research, looking at the data is super important, but it's equally important to actually get some face time with your customers.
Yeah, makes sense. Are you at Supermetrics, as you mentioned, like you are talking with the clients and asking from them, but are you kind of, you mentioned that you are like collecting the data and looking at that one, but are you kind of asking questions from customers in a scalable way? So for example, like inside of the product, you would have like some kind of questions, or through, let's say, email questionnaires, you would be asking mm-hmm. something like that. Are you using those?
Yeah, we do. We have we have like NPS surveys and customer effort score surveys and satisfaction surveys. And, you know, we run, that's our CX team. We have a great CX team or customer experience team who runs a lot of that. And that's something that in some organizations may sit under product marketing, but we're lucky enough at Supermetrics to have a really good dedicated team for that. And some of it happens directly in the product. Some of it happens over email at a certain interaction. And some of it happens by, you know, giving our customers also proactive, and they will like to book calls with us just to tell us, you know, how things are going, what they like, what they don't like. And that's really an invaluable resource.
Yeah, makes sense. You mentioned there a little bit about like the your team and that part, but can you like a little bit more share, if you think about like your role as a head of product marketing, like who mm-hmm. are the people inside of your organization who you work together mostly?
Like as in the product marketing function, or as, you know, within Supermetrics as a whole?
Yeah, within Supermetrics as a whole.
Yeah, so obviously... I personally sit in the marketing team, and that's another whole discussion. Like some companies will have product marketing sitting in the product team, so they're actually a part of the product organization. But a much more common structure, and in my opinion, slightly better structure, is to have them sit in the marketing team. So I sit in the marketing team, and some of our primary stakeholders are, of course, everybody within that marketing team. Outside of that, I'd say my two primary stakeholders are the head of product. So basically, we have biweeklies or sometimes weeklies in general, we sit on a bunch of meetings together where we go over what's happening with the product, what's our release schedule, are we on time, how are things progressing? Because then that helps me work in product marketing and kind of work with the team to deliver all the collateral, all the campaigns, all the assets we need to bring that product to market. So product team is a huge, huge stakeholder. Equally important is the sales team. So our head of sales, the regional heads, et cetera, understanding, again, what's kind of working in that market, maybe joining in, like such a hugely valuable resource for a product marketer, and I would say any marketer, is to just sit in on a sales call, hear what the discussion is, how people are reacting, how they're resonating with that value proposition, whatever you are marketing. It just gives so much insight. There are ways to do that scalably, but also just literally sitting on a call is great. So, and then of course, working with the sales team to understand what kind of collateral needs they have, understanding, you know, what kind of competition is coming up in discussions, what are the typical pushbacks, so that we can prepare the marketing team and with the product team to kind of handle those pushbacks and objections, essentially. So primarily stakeholders, obviously marketing team, given that I sit in marketing, but equally important are the product teams and sales team.
Yeah. Maybe we could hop onto the sales part next. So the sales sure. enablement. And I actually remember, like before COVID, I've been to the Supermetrics office once, and I've actually met with Martin, your VP of sales, mm-hmm. like earlier on. So like really excited to hear a bit on this one. And this is actually something that, if I think about like my work at Advance, this is something that like I do, of course, like work with our marketing team together and like think about how they can help the sales as well. But I mm-hmm. think for a lot of people, sales enablement, it means having those pitch decks and sales decks. But what else like sales enablement really is?
Yeah, I feel like there's a running joke with product marketers, which is, you know, they're slide machines. They're creating a ton of slides meant for pitch decks, etc. But that's just part of it. And actually, at Supermetrics, we have also an interesting situation where we have a dedicated sales enablement function within sales. And now for sales, that function is responsible for making sure that the team has all the collateral they need, make sure that it's in the hands of the right reps, make sure that it's organized nicely. And, you know, that whenever there are needs for something new, they get flagged and they get brought to whoever is best equipped to deliver that collateral for them. And more often than not, that is product marketing. So there's this whole, you know, discussion between, is it sales enablement? Is it sales collateral development, et cetera? I think it's a little bit of both, but that also varies a little from organization to organization. But yeah, to your question on what else does this concept of sales enablement contain, and especially if we think about the collateral side of things, pitch decks are important. I mean, no doubt about it. Especially when you're in B2B SaaS, and especially if you're in B2B enterprise SaaS, they become very, very, very crucial part of your storytelling. Now, it's also important to understand that the best deck in the world is not going to, on its own, sell a product. You also need to be able to have a conversation, be able to interact with a prospect, be able to have that, well, like we were talking about, have that fluent conversation with them about a product. So that's where another big part of sales enablement comes in, which is stuff like literal training videos, sales training in general, just explaining what this product is, for example, if we roll out a new feature or a new data source at Supermetrics, one of the things that we do is we sit down with the sales team and we talk about, okay, here's what we've built. And this is a joint session with product marketing and the product team. It's like, okay, here's what we built. Here's what it does. Here's the value it brings. And here's, you know, how our ideal customer profile can benefit from using this. So really a huge part, like the pitch decks are just the top of the iceberg. Then you have this, you know, the bottom, the stuff that's under the water, which is, you know, training, one pagers, you know, explainer videos, stuff like that. Those become super important, so that people can actually, have conversations about the product.
Yeah. If those are the things how like product marketing can support sales, then on the other hand, like I'm always thinking like how as a sales guy I can support the marketing in the best way. So as a product marketer, what are you expecting from the sales team in order to make your job easier?
Sales is not going to want to hear this, or reps are not going to want to hear this, but please add good notes to Salesforce. keep you just pay attention to Salesforce hygiene. I say that kind of slightly, you know, chuckling and laughing, but it's true. If we have really quality, because like product marketing can't be on every call, and sales doesn't want product marketing on every call. That would make no sense. So to get that intelligence from what's going on the actual, you know, the customer, you know, customer interface, it's super important to have that documented somewhere. So every time, like my favorite thing is when I go, I see there's a really interesting deal that's progressing through the pipeline in Salesforce, to go in and actually look at the notes and actually see that there's, you know, quality, you know, long form stuff, not just a few sentences that, oh, they're interested in this, oh, they didn't like that, but like actual quality information on what's been discussed, What were the pushbacks? How did we overcome them? And how did we move forward? That stuff is just a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you using or are you planning to use at some point like something like Gong, like some revenue intelligence kind of platform that could kind of collect all that information from the sales calls and then it will be bringing to your table without going through all those like separate nodes on the Salesforce?
Yeah, it's Gong, of course. That's I was alluding to Gong a little bit at the beginning when I said that there's a way to scalably collect a lot of this information. Gong, of course, a very good example of that. Let's just say it's on our wish list currently not on Gong, but it's definitely there's a reason why there's a lot of hype around that platform.
Yeah, makes sense. You mentioned earlier there about like when you have like new features coming into the Supermetrics or like new data sources or that kind of thing, that you talk about those with your sales. And I think like features are as well kind of one part of product launch and go-to-market strategy. So we could hop on to that one next. And like, what do you think? What is a great product launch? How does that look like?
Oh, wow. That looks a little different for every launch. Now, I think it's also useful to, because like not every product launch is going to be like a massive, like a big new shiny thing. It's not going to require a keynote at Apple headquarters. So some of them are smaller, like incremental updates, like a new data source, maybe a new feature to your software offering. Maybe it's just a little kind of tiny thing. And in those cases, it doesn't require like a whole big branded campaign to push it out. What it does require is you reflect those changes, for example, on your website, make sure that it's prominently available. If it makes sense, you add something about it into your sales collateral. If it's a really kind of a highly requested feature, maybe work with performance marketing to add it in your ad campaigns, for example. But it doesn't necessarily require like a 20-minute keynote on what it is and what we did. Then again, if it is a big, like a monumental change, maybe you're pivoting significantly, maybe you are releasing a new iPhone, maybe you are doing something slightly larger, then it does require, you know, all those things that I mentioned before, but it might require stuff like a press release. And then you need to work with a PR agency to get that in the popular publications and get it that visibility that you want. Maybe it requires that you work on a nice marketing video for it. In those cases, sometimes you can do them in-house. Maybe you need to work with an agency to do that. So really, and that's why product launches and go-to-market are so kind of interesting, because they're a little different for each launch. And now I think the best kind of the rule of thumb here, like the best advice I could give to anybody is to just for any given product launch, just have a process in place. Like what do you do? Literally like a checklist of the steps that need to happen to get it from point A to point B. And then, you know, maybe that first qualifying criteria can be like, is this a major launch or is it a small launch? If it's a small launch, we do the smaller version of this checklist. If it's a major launch, we do the whole thing. And the reason why having a process is so important is because if you do not, then you're constantly going to be playing catch up to what the product team is releasing. You're going to be in a situation where they're going to come to you like, okay, this is ready. Now it's time to go. And you don't want to be in that situation where you're constantly playing catch up, especially if you have, for example, we at Supermetrics, we have a super high performing product team that are very kind of proactive and have a good tight release schedule. If you don't have a process in place, then like visibility into a roadmap or something like that, you're always going to be playing catch up. So once you have a process in place, it's much easier to say that, okay, we're looking at the roadmap now. We're getting to say 3 weeks to this feature being released. Maybe you check with the PM to make sure they're still on time. If yes, then we kickstart our process, which is, okay, is this big or small? If it's small, okay, where do we add it on the website? How do we add it into our search campaigns, et cetera, et cetera? Does it require its own blog post, for example? And then you go from there. So having a process in place is pretty invaluable when it comes to that.
Yeah. When talking with like B2B SaaS marketing leaders, what I hear quite often is that there is kind of silos between the marketing and the product. There are like some great examples where they are super close to each other, but then at the same time, I feel like there are a lot of gaps in between there. And I feel like the main reason behind of that one is really like, as you mentioned, there are like a lot of product teams are like growing super fast and they are like able to deliver all that. And then if you think about head of product, they might be thinking like only about the new features and all of that, mm-hmm. not about how to market those ones. So mm-hmm. what would be your best tips in kind of making the relationship between product and marketing like closer to mm-hmm. get those product people understand like the value of marketing and why they should be using time for the relationship as well?
Yeah, it's a good talking point. I've been lucky enough in my career to all the software companies I've worked to have had really good and strong product owners or heads of product, people that kind of organically understand that value. But there's definitely things you can do to kind of stream like make that relationship even more effective. And I think well, it starts from really basic stuff, like just set up, have a cadence of meetings, whatever it is, you know, sit down for 30 minutes every 2 weeks, just chat about what's going on, what's happening, give them information on what's happening with marketing and ask for information on what's happening in product. And to make sure that you kind of get strong stakeholders and like buy-in from the product team or any team in the organization is it's kind of like you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours type of situation. So help out with one thing that, for example, if we think about the product example, one thing that I've done a lot is I've literally done user interviews either with the product team, sometimes without the product team, and then just shared my insights with them because they love that stuff. They want to know how people are using their product, how they can make it even better. And it's like, it's not a lost effort for me as a product marketer, because that gives me really good information on how I can bundle this product better, message it better. But, you know, start identifying those actions that you can take that can benefit, you know, various stakeholders around the organization and work on those.
Yeah, makes sense. And I really think like one of the things that I think all like SaaS marketers should be doing is like when a new customer is joining them, like go sit next to them or like see over Zoom and tell like, hey, here's a product. Please do whatever you do. And like just follow there and like understand like where is the value moment. I think that is, for example, mm-hmm. something that actually not that many people like can answer. What is the like first value moment of your product? And I think like best way that one out is really to ask from those ideal customers.
Exactly. Because and that's, you know, an ever shifting, you know, metric in most companies is like, what's the aha moment? What makes them realize that, okay, this is something worth paying money for, this is worth something renewing for next month or next quarter or next year. And you only really get that aha moment if you can look at the data in, you know, your back end all you want, but that's not gonna, you know, really give you that sentiment on you know, the value moment or the aha moment. And that you can only do again with this kind of qualitative study and research.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think like when talking about product marketing, it's kind of broad. You are doing things all the time, but then mm-hmm. at the same time, there are some like projects, like companies might be doing a project regarding their messaging or a project regarding their positioning. And actually, on my last episode, I talked with Mark Huber from Metadata. And Mark had a question for you. The question was that Mark was at Metadata. They were like building their messaging and positioning this year. And the question was that, how do you know that you are on a right track on your messaging and positioning before publishing it live?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is a great question. I think not to sound like a broken record, but literally talking to that ICP, that like the your target market. One thing you could do to supplement this with some, because I know, you know, quantitative data is going to be important as well. So one thing, especially if you have resources to do this, is to do something like a smoke test where you launch, for example, a miniature version of your website in a certain market with that messaging and track how people react to it and how people are kind of coming through your funnel. That should be able to, and then you can, the good thing about that is you can kind of compare it to where you were and where you're going. So that's one example of how you could bring in the quantitative side of things. But literally qualitatively, like focus groups, get people together, talk to them, like compare messaging, just give them two versions of the same value proposition and ask, you know, which one makes more sense. And again, here it's like so important to really let that person do the talking. And I am very guilty of this. I will, like, someone will kind of have a quiet moment and be thinking about something, and then I'll jump in with another question just because I want to move them on. Don't necessarily do that. Just let them formulate their thought process and tell you exactly what they're thinking and how that messaging is resonating with them. Because we can come up with, especially when we, like, use an organization, come up with a value proposition or some kind of messaging or positioning statement, it's going to sound really good to you because you came up with it. But the second you put that in front of somebody else, they're going to be able to tell you whether or not it actually makes sense. So I think testing it, doing as much testing as you can before you roll it out across, you know, globally, that's the key to success.
Yeah. And I think, like, really message testing is kind of a new category as well. And I need to give a shout out for Pep Laya and their company Winter that they will be building around message testing. I'm not sure. Have you, like, seen their videos on LinkedIn? They have had these, like, great funny videos about, like, messaging on different audiences. I just love those.
I've seen a few of them. Also, we were kind of looking at that tool as well. They definitely, it's one of those companies that do this kind of, you know, don't know if I call it viral marketing or not, but do it right. It's an engaging way of interacting with their brand.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that company as well, they are a great example of kind of great positioning and messaging in a way that they kind of understand their ICP, like really focusing on something. And then, like, some people love them, some probably hate them, but I think it's better than be like kind of this gray that everyone thinks that, yeah, all right.
If you try to be everything for everybody, you end up being nothing for anybody. So it's like kind of, yeah. At some point you need to pick a side and just, you know, position yourself and believe in that positioning and just go after it.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, this was a great discussion about product marketing. So big thanks for joining, Alex. Big thanks for everyone checking this episode out. And if you liked it, feel free to share it with your friends and colleagues, and have a great week, everyone, and bye-bye. This was Sales and Marketing Talk Show, and I'm your host, Samuli Salonen. Thank you so much for listening, and see you in the next episode.